Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Good morning. This is Robert Forto, and on the line, calling in from Tok, Alaska, the Gypsy Musher himself, Hugh Neff. How's it going?
Hey, Robert. Good to hear your voice. It's been a while. It's quite warm up here. We're already about 80 degrees here this morning. It's only 10 o'clock.
You know, it's the same here, but it's
Alaska gets pretty warm.
It does. It's definitely summertime here in Alaska. So what's happening in your neck of the woods? I know we were talking a couple of minutes off air about the fires, and you got some puppies on the ground. How's life in Tok?
We definitely, everybody in this neck of the woods has to have a evacuation plan, just in case. You never know. We had some close fires here a couple of weeks ago, and then we got some decent rain last week, so it's a little bit safer, but you know how it is with the sun nowadays. It could all dry out within a couple hours. But we have a fire in the hills, about 8 miles from town here. So we had a day last week where it was raining all day, and then at nighttime it was actually smoky out. So it's always a danger and a worry up here in Alaska. I know you had a much closer call than myself, and unfortunately a lot of mushers in the Willow area actually lost their property and their homes here 3 weeks ago. So it's been a tough year for a lot of people up here in Alaska so far.
It has, you know, not only here in Willow, but up near Fairbanks, a lot of mushers had to evacuate. I know Brent Sass had to get out all of his dogs. What's interesting with him is he doesn't have a car to get out. He has to ride in on a trail. He isn't on the road system. Do you know much about where he's at? And how difficult would it be to get a group of dogs like that out if you don't have road access?
Well, it's nice. You have neighbors and friends that are willing to help you out. He had a bunch of folks that happened to be in the area that were there to help his assistant Tim to get the dogs out. But he could get a vehicle back there in the summertime. It just, he has to go through a small little creek at one point. But yeah, we're definitely in Alaska. You know, we all like to be independent up here and, you know, be our own little kings of our kingdoms. But when it comes to dangerous situations, you have to have a network of people that are willing to help you get your dogs out of there. Like I'm sure you had a few people helping you when you're moving your dogs up to Dave Shears.
We did. We know we moved out at about 1 o'clock in the morning and got everybody over to to our friend Dave's and camped out at his place. I don't think his neighbors like that as much as they do in the wintertime, because they had no idea how long we were going to be there.
Yeah, but you know, it's Alaska and people realize the situation. That was just a tough one to stomach, considering it was started by fireworks. And I'm a big believer. I just don't even understand why Alaskans need to be using fireworks. Maybe if you're down on the coast where it gets a little dark in the summer, but you know how it is up here. We barely even see any darkness to enjoy them. So I think fireworks might be a little bit more useful and enjoyable in the wintertime and not in the summertime in Alaska, at least.
I totally agree with you there. You know, there's a big push here to ban them in the summer, and I don't have any problems with them in the winter. But, you know, us with sled dogs and fireworks don't get along as well as people think with the noise and them carrying. And I know we have several dogs that really freak out over the loud noises, and they want to tear up their houses and do all kinds of stuff. So it's rough any way they go around when you're dealing with fireworks and dogs.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not kid the rest of the world, but Alaska is still a little bit of the Wild West, and I've got plenty of neighbors that are out, you know, testing out their guns and stuff. So there's a shooting range here in town that people can go to, and there's other ways to enjoy Alaska. You don't need to have fireworks to celebrate the 4th of July. I know historically it's a big part of the holidays, and there's a place for fireworks, but, you know, we have a big firework display up here for New Year's Eve when it's dark out. We don't really need them. I mean, people don't understand, but Alaska, 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning at times, the sun's coming up already, so it doesn't really get dark here at all.
That's exactly right. So what's happening with the dogs? I understand you have some puppies there. How old are they? Where do they come from? And what are the plans?
You know, they're a few years away from racing just yet, but I got a few litters out of Rosalita. Had a litter with Lester, and then we had a litter with Cohiba and a dog named Pike, and then my other litter, I actually already sold most of those pups. They're from a dog named Cleopatra. I keep about a half to two-thirds of the dogs, the pups, primarily the males. People would be amazed that most mushers tend to run a lot more male dogs than females for long distance. Short distance is a different story for sprint. But, yeah, I found homes and sold a few. I don't really have puppies to sell them to make money. I, you know, do it more for racing purposes. But if I do have some extra pups, I'm always looking to find a good home for a pup here or there. So, fortunately, I met some friends through the Fairbanks and North Pole area, and our good friend Summer C, who's helped us out along the way, I was able to hook her up with a couple dogs as well. So, you know, pups are a big part of the summer mushing scene as far as taking up your time. You have to spend a lot of time just playing with them. You know, they need to have that bond with the human. It's a big part of, you know, sort of like a parent with their child. They're going to learn a lot in those first few months, and you want them to know that you are, you know, the king of their world.
So is Lester the
mama,
famous brown dog that you have?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody knows Lester. I call him Lester the molester because he's always jumping on me and licking me and trying to climb me like I'm a tree or something. But
pups have his look?
Not necessarily. They look more like Rosie. They've got more of a darker look to them. It's funny, I got on the phone in here and all of a sudden all my dogs are walking up to me wanting to talk to me. I got Walter sitting here panting away. And Walter, you know, people are always, I do my talks over at the Golden Bear every night here in Toke, and people are always talking about how Walter's an old dog, and he just doesn't think that way. So even though he's 11 now, in my yard, he's still barely in the top five of the older dogs that I have. I've had older dogs than Walter. Maestro is 16 now. And my old dogs, I enjoy hanging out with them as much as I do the puppies. If not more, because you know how it is with your older dogs. You have such a history with them. They're like a time machine that you get to hang out with and think about the good old days.
Right, right.
And
so
Walter's done 13,000 milers. Maestro, back in his day, was my main boy. He did 11,000 milers. He wasn't a leader. He was just a main team dog with, you know, good energy that the rest of the dogs really fed off of. And his mother, June Marie, was my first leader. And Junie just passed away a couple of years ago, but she lived to be 18.
Wow.
Pretty amazing little girl. A dog I got for $100 from Curtis Earhart when I first moved to Alaska back in 95. But she raced until she was 12, believe it or not. So I love talking to the tourists and the people that visit about the length of time these dogs are capable of racing and traveling. A lot of folks, you know, think, oh, those poor dogs have to run 1,000 miles. And they don't realize that huskies are pretty much the most traveled animal on earth, you know, long-distance husky. And these dogs are bred to do what they do, and they love exercise, and they love exploring life.
So you had mentioned that you do your nightly talks there at the hotel. Who are your visitors, and what's it been like this year? Are there lots of folks coming through? Is it
less
folks than years past?
Hard to say if it's more or less. Maybe because of the fires, it got slow there for a little bit. But it's doing great. This is obviously the peak of the season. We have many buses coming through from, whether it be Skagway or Haines or Valdez or Anchorage or Fairbanks or Dawson. So lots of buses coming through here every day. Our population probably grows by nearly a half at night by all the different people that stay in RV parks and the hotels in town here. Toke obviously is the major first hub, first city that people come into when they drive into Alaska. So most of my folks come from all over the world. I get lots of visitors from Europe, lots of Germans, lots of Dutch people, and folks from all over. The buses, though, it's been interesting this year. A lot of them have been coming from Wisconsin. So I like to play up, you know, everything that I've accomplished with Walter. And then at the end of my little spiel, at the start of my talks, I mentioned to everybody from Wisconsin that I happen to be from Chicago, and that seems to shock them because they don't really think of city folk that live up in Alaska that are racing the Iditarod and the Quest every year.
Right, right. And of course, I'm sure you throw a football analogy or two in there as well.
Oh, of course. After a while, I go, by the way, Walter's done 13,000-mile races, and his last name happens to be Walter Payton. And they always get a good chuckle out of that. But I also explain to them that I spent a lot of my youth and my childhood up in Wisconsin as a Boy Scout. My dad was my scout master, and, you know, I'm the Eagle Scout. So my buddies and I, till this day, you know, we're in our mid-40s now, and we still go up to our old Boy Scout camp and go canoeing on the Wolf River. In fact, I just did it last month, and Walter actually went canoeing with us. So that was pretty neat. That was Walter's first canoe trip.
So I caught a quick blurb on Facebook about a guy that visited you that was on some sort of hike. What is that story, and what's that all about?
There's a fellow named Logan that was hiking from Barrow down to he was hoping to go to Argentina, but I just got a message from him this morning that he's having issues in Canada. So I'm going to find out here in a little bit. He's going to be calling me. But I know he was really worried about the animal issues with bears and what have you, because folks don't realize that a lot of the wildlife in fire seasons tend to gravitate. If there's a lot of smoke, they not only gravitate to the rivers, but they gravitate to the highways.
Right.
So I was just in Fairbanks a couple of days ago picking up some supplies, and on the way back I counted 7 moose within like 45 minutes right along the highway.
Right. Well, if he does it, that's one heck of a hike from the top of the world to the bottom.
Yeah, I think people, the more I'm in Alaska, I think there's a lot crazier people doing some stranger stuff than we as dog mushers do. I mean, the Iditarod and the Quest put in nice trails, and it's a set format that's been going on for years now, where people don't realize every year lots of folks come up here and they're doing sort of like the movie Gumball Rally, you know, they're racing here from Florida, or they're going to maybe bicycle down to, you know, South America. So you see all types of characters up here. Almost every other day we got somebody biking into town with a, you know, totally overloaded, you know, not a motorcycle, but a bicycle with
right.
like 40 or 50 pounds of gear on it. And to me, those people are pretty hardy folks. They must, I don't know how they can keep their weight up, to tell you the truth. That's a lot of energy they're burning off.
You know, they come up and down the Parks Highway every day too. And I can just imagine how long it takes them to get from point A to point B. It looks like they're only going a couple of miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, it makes you also realize that they must have a love of what they're doing, and not too many places in the world you can do something like that either.
Right.
That being said, it's definitely not my style.
So the last time we spoke, you were just getting ready to go on your school tour of the East Coast. Can you recap that and then tell us what's next?
Oh, that went great. Went all up and down, you know, New York, down to Carolinas, went to Virginia Beach and got to hang out with a buddy of mine named Al Stagg. And then was in North Carolina visiting and doing talks, and then back up through Chicago. And I've been doing that for over a decade now, and it's a lot of joy, a lot of heartache, too, to tell you the truth. I get a lot of folks asking me to do certain favors, you know, for kids with issues, whether it be leukemia or what have you, and it gives you an appreciation for your health, seeing folks going through troubling times. So I enjoy doing that, and I also enjoy my other talks that I do, and those are over in Europe, and I'll be heading over there here in September once again. This will be my fourth year in a row of going through Germany, and we're branching out a little bit this year. We're going to be heading up into the UK a little bit more, going to England, Scotland, Luxembourg, I believe, and possibly France, too. So that's a ways off. That's not until mid-September. So right now it's just all about taking it easy, hanging out with the dogs, and enjoying my time in Tok, because, you know, I'm on the road so much that, you know, home is where the heart is. So I like hanging out here and living the mellow lifestyle, too.
Right. And I don't think you take dogs with you when you go to Europe. I can imagine it'd be a much more logistical problem going there than staying here in the States.
Oh, definitely. I did last year. And, there's a part of me that would love to every year, but realistically, it's a little bit stressful on Walter, and Walter's about the only dog that I'd bring there. This year, we're going to do it a little bit differently, and instead of just doing presentations, we're actually going to be doing day-long or multi-day, you know, symposium seminars where the folks are all going to have their dogs with them. We're going to be doing displays and doing little runs around the whatever park we're going to be in, a forest preserve. So that is awesome. They should almost try to do stuff like that in Alaska, I think.
Right.
I don't know if we could do it in the summer because everybody's working, but maybe a fall-time get-together at a state forest type deal. I know you have your get-together at the park in Anchorage, and I just think it's a neat idea. I don't know how it's been working for you, but I think it's good for dogs to socialize with the dogs if they're not really used to it all.
I think it's a great idea, not only to bring people together, but bring the dogs together so they can socialize and hang out together. And it's excellent training, at least on my part of it.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that experience is, you know, the key to life. That's why I race so much, because I'm always wanting to learn more. And same with dogs. I think it's fairly obvious a sled dog that's been around the block has a calmer look to them, I guess, and just they're not as spastic and what we call, you know, sketchy, like nervous. I think the dogs that get out and about, they know the routine and they look forward to it. People would be surprised when you're loading up the dog truck to go anywhere. Those dogs are jumping and they can't wait to get out on the road.
Right. So Hugh, I'm sure a lot of your fans know what's happening. Are you signing up for Iditarod, Yukon Quest? What's the plan this year?
It's still a little bit up in the air. Of course, I'm going to do the Quest. It's my baby. I love the Quest. I don't really worry about winning it or what place I come in. It's a part of my soul. I mean, I'm always, you know, the Quest and I are so tied together now after being out there for 15 years that I whenever I'm out there, I just feel like I'm at home. I probably will do. I have some other people that are interested in me going and racing over in the Finnmark Sloped again. So it's up in the air right now, to tell you the truth. There's no stress or hurry in signing up for anything just yet. But whatever I do, my goal the last 6-7 years has always been the same thing. Don't just go through the routine and don't just be a dog musher as a business. Do it because you're an explorer at heart and you love to get out and see different parts of the world or different parts of Alaska. So what I'd really love to do, to be quite honest, is start a new race in Alaska somewhere this winter, and nothing major, just, you know, a 200-300 miler in a native area, whether it's up near Manly in Eureka and Brent's area with Cody and Tanana, or maybe up by Huslia somewhere. I think there's just something super joyful about being in native villages during a race. I think the people really appreciate the effort you make as an organization or as a group to involve them in what you're doing. That was the coolest part about the Iditarod for me this year, easily, was going to the Huslia area. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that really brought some newfound interest in Iditarod, at least up in that part of the country. They haven't had it there in a long time. I know some of those checkpoints have never hosted the Iditarod, and I think they really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and, you know, historically speaking, I think there's always room for more stories and books when it comes to mushing, because there's so many stories that people don't even know about. Like, what I really learned in the race this year was that the fellow that came in second place in the Iditarod, the original Iditarod, was from Huslia, a guy named Bobby Vent. And he actually was 62 years old when he came in second place. And he went from McGrath all the way to Nome with only 6 dogs, which just blows my mind. Yeah, tough dude. I don't know how many miles it is, but it's probably 700-ish. So I always tell the tourists and folks I'm talking to, it's not about quantity, it's about quality and how your dogs are working as a unit. And that's why I love racing over in Europe, and hopefully sooner or later somebody will figure that out in Alaska, that a lot of the best races in Europe are only 8-dog races. You only can have 8 dogs on your team. And they're only a couple hundred miles, but, boy, they're so much fun to be a part of.
Isn't a race that's part of the Finnmark only an eight dog race, or 8 or 10? I know it's pretty difficult on those guys going up and down some of those mountains.
Oh, I would say it's a little bit more of a workout on the human.
Right.
You're off that you're running. So, yeah, they're, it's not just the Finnmark. There's the Amundsen, the Posvik. Almost every race they have in that part in Scandinavia, they actually have two styles. They have the bigger team and the smaller team. And I think that's wonderful for the people that don't want to be the super competitive, you know, big mushers with, you know, lots of dogs. They only want to have a small recreational kennel of, you know, 8 or 10 dogs or what have you. So I think it's awesome. And it would be great to see more of that in Alaska. I'm still trying to set up a race like that around the Tok area here in the springtime, possibly in late March or April, where it's just a short little, 100, 200-mile race with 8 dogs. I think it'd be a hoot to watch.
So speaking of stories and books, I know during Iditarod time and when we spoke after, you were thinking about writing a new one. Have you started that, and what's it about?
It's in the works. Summer's going to help out again. My buddy Scott Jansen, the Mush and Mortician, is signed on to help out as well, and it's going to be more not necessarily about the racing aspect of dog mushing, but just the history of the trail and the strangeness of the aura, I would say is a good word to use, but we're going to call it Visions and Hallucinations from the Alaskan Trail. And it's just going to talk about just strange sightings that have happened out along any trail, really, because it's not just the Iditarod or the Quest. There's been lots of strange instances of people seeing things, hearing things, what have you, and then they find out at a later date after studying that part of the trail of stuff that happened there a long time ago. So I actually got this idea after hanging out with Dave Branholm a couple of years ago in the Iditarod, and then Scott and I have been talking about it, and we're going to try to get a lot of mushers involved with it. It's just not going to be a book about a certain musher and their dogs. It's going to be about the trail more than anything.
Well, Scott Jansen, he had a heck of a story out there last year in a place very similar to where you were 2 years ago. He had a real rough time out there on that ice and dang near died himself.
It was a little bit different. He was over by Click where I was in Gulliver, and he wasn't the only one. There was other mushers that were going through issues out there as well. Thankfully, Lance was around to help him out, and Books and Koyuk were able to make sure that all the dogs were okay and all that. But that's why, yet again, it's very important for, mushers to look out for each other, whether it's a fire or it's on the trail. You know, I've seen it in my 20 years of racing how, you know, when I started mushing, we used to have a code called the Code of the North, where we're all supposed to help each other out and look out for each other. Unfortunately, it's gotten so hyper-competitive over the last, 5 to 10 years that a little bit of that's gone out the window and it's everybody out for themselves. But I think out of everything I noticed with the fire situation here last couple weeks ago, what was truly beautiful is how the mushers came together to help each other out, whether it be the folks in the UK raising money through their auctioning of different items, or people like, Dave Shear letting you stay at his place with your dogs. I think that's when you saw the true beauty of dog mushing. Speaking of which, there is going to be a get-together that Abby and Marie are setting up at the Dog Mushers Hall in Fairbanks on the 19th of July, where they're going to be having bands and music, and all the proceeds are going to go to the mushers from Willow. I'm actually donating one of my old racing parkas for the auction, and I know people are encouraged, mushers, if they have anything they want to donate to help raise money, because like a native buddy of mine said, you might not necessarily see eye to eye with everybody in life, but you better try to respect them, because, sooner or later, then you might need their help as much as they might need your help.
You know, you had mentioned the coming together of this community. I think it was remarkable how everybody stepped up and really pulled together. I know we were talking about Scott Jansen. He opened his building, which is going to be his new funeral home down here in the Wasilla area, and Martin Booser. I think they had 400 or 500 dogs over at his place. And then all the little mushers, the no names, if you will, really came together and helped out, helping moving dogs and putting people up. It was just an amazing sight to see everybody coming together and helping out each other in that time of need.
Yeah, and that's, God bless Alaska, you know, that's the beauty of Alaska is she makes us all realize that there is no great musher that's better than everybody else. We're all just human beings, and we're all loving Alaska. You know, there ain't many places like Alaska on this earth, but Alaska can be the most dangerous place on this earth as well, whether it's the cold or the fires or what have you. So as humans, I think our biggest weakness often is our own personal egos. And just to tone it down a notch and to realize how lucky you are to be living here is, I think, the key to, you know, having an enjoyable life up here.
So, Hugh, we have just about 4 minutes left. We always like to talk about a dog or two. I know we mentioned the puppies, and we always talk about Walter. Tell us about a couple of others that are hanging around the yard. What are they doing, and what are they all about?
Not too many new dogs. Besides the pups, I got a lot of my yearling dogs are actually with my buddy John, who he borrowed some dogs. He's tied up with another friend of mine, Paul Gephardt. You know, I did her out great. And those dogs are actually down in Skagway doing little runs for the tourists down there. And those are my yearlings. It's a beautiful litter, Parker and Earl, and their brothers are about maybe 14 months now, and I usually try to send down one litter of dog to the coast, yearlings, and just to, you know, toughen them up mentally. I don't like to do too much tourism with dogs in the summer. I think it's just too hot for them. I like to just do more free running and just day-to-day hanging out with them. But for those younger dogs, I think it's actually a good training for them. So those dogs are all, you know, go back to Annie and Bodie, and they're great energy. As usual, all of a really lovely looking team again this year, but nowadays everybody has a beautiful team every year. So my key isn't necessarily to win a race. I know I can't really be competitive with a lot of the top mushers that are training, you know, dozens of dogs and have lots of people working for them. That's not really not my gig. My gig is to have dogs that have an incredible journey that I love talking to tourists and telling them, you know, I've got over a dozen dogs that have raced 8 or more 1,000 milers. For me, that's the trophy right there is if you can do this year in, year out, that's how you're winning. It's not about trying to win the race and set some record. That's just a year. Just think about doing it every year with the same dogs. I think it's a little bit more joyful in many respects.
Totally agree with you there. Hugh, we're just about out of time. We'll make sure that We meet up again before you head off on your school tour in, or Europe tour in September. We'll have a show or two before then and maybe do one over there. That's always fun trying to coordinate the time differences between there and here. So take care and we'll talk again soon, okay?
All right. Have a safe summer. Let's pray for some rain here and there too.
There you go. Hugh Neff of the Gypsy Musher. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.